Hey kids, if you have a memoir or a novel draft that you're in the process of revising, Author Accelerator has a free treat for you. Ready, Set, Revise, a 3-hour workshop that will help you evaluate your manuscript, figure out where you are in the process, and hopefully make it all less painful. The actual workshop is on Friday, July 8th from noon to 3 p.m. Pacific time, so that's 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern. During the workshop, Author Accelerator book coaches, including Jenny Nash, will explain how best to think about revision, talk about the things that writers most often get wrong, and, this is so cool, put you in a small group with a coach who coaches the kind of books you write. This is a great chance to get yourself in the right headspace to finish that book up right. So, for details and to sign up, head to authoraccelerator.com/manuscript-incubator. That's authoraccelerator.com/manuscript-incubator, and of course, the link will be in the show notes. Hey kids, welcome to episode 5 of the Hashtag MWriting Blueprint for a Book Challenge. As always, Hashtag MWriting is the weekly podcast for fun, fresh, actionable advice for writers in all genres. Nonfiction, memoir, fiction, of all the, every kind of fiction you can imagine. We're here to help you get inspired and get the work done. I'm KJ Dell'Antonia. I am the author of 2 novels, The Chicken Sisters and In Her Boots, as well as the nonfiction book, How to Be a Happier Parent. I'm also the former editor and lead writer of The Motherlode at the New York Times.
And I'm Jenny Nash. I'm the author of 11 books in 3 genres, founder and CEO of Author Accelerator, and creator of the Blueprint Framework for Writing Better Books.
So my usual co-hosts, Jess and Serena, are going to pop in from time to time, but for this 10-episode Blueprint for a Book series, it's going to be me, Jenny, and our book coach guests, and we're focusing, as you might have guessed from the title, on books, specifically creating a blueprint that can help you take a book idea from big amorphous blob or draft that just isn't coming together, eek, or just an idea. And the series is designed to help you get that in shape and make taking that idea or blob or draft to the next stage easier. But if a book is not in your plans, keep listening. We're going to have a great time talking about what goes into making a strong structure for a book. And that makes reading more fun. And it's also probably going to spark some ideas for you for books that might come up later down the road.
Our guest today is Savannah Gilbo. She is an Author Accelerator certified book coach and also certified in the Story Grid method. She loves working with commercial fiction for all ages, and her favorite genres are fantasy, sci-fi, and romance. Welcome, Savannah.
Hi, guys. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here and to talk character.
Yay.
So in our first 2 episodes, we dug down into why we write and how to share why we write with the reader. This is episode 5, and in other episodes we focused on finding our readers and making them a promise that tells them why this is the book for them. Today we're talking protagonists, we're talking protagonists in memoir, and in nonfiction we're kind of talking author perspective point of view. We'll explain, don't worry, because this applies to nonfiction too. But what we're really talking about is change, as in there better be some. The arc of change is famous in fiction. It is much the same in memoir, but there is a change in shift, or a change and a shift in nonfiction too, because change is what pulls the reader from the beginning to the end of every single narrative book. But wait, A quick side note, because this 10-episode series comes with a challenge. You can sign up at authoraccelerator.com/amwritingblueprintchallenge. Link will be in the show notes or beneath the video if you're watching on YouTube. And in that challenge, you can listen to every episode and complete the weekly assignment. And by the end of the challenge, you'll have a blueprint for your book, which is in itself reward enough, but depending on when you're joining us, there are other possibilities. We have drawings to have me or Jenny offer a critique on your blueprint and join you for a 50-minute phone call to discuss your work, or We have ways for you to commit yourself to this process. Go back to the very beginning and get an incredible bargain on a critique and phone call from an author accelerator book coach, because you have put your money where your mouth is and you are going to do this thing. So you can get all the details for all of that at authoraccelerator.com/amwritingblueprintchallenge. And now, change.
Right?
Jenny, why would we need change in a book? I don't understand. Why can't I just write a book where I just talk about all my characters going to lunch and having coffee and eating things that I like to imagine that they've cooked?
I mean, you could write that book.
I pretty much have written that book. Then I had to turn it into different books. So, yeah.
I mean, the thing about change, which is the big idea we're talking about, and we're going to get down into specifically who changes and how they change and how we experience that change and all of those things. But if something doesn't change, the book is I always call it flat. It's just flat. It just sits there. There's no life to it. There's nothing that grabs you. There's nothing that moves you. And we're talking here about the really big thing that a book does, because books are very unique art forms. There's other art forms, you know, there's music, there's photography, there's movies, there's sculpture, there's all kinds of different ways of experiencing art. But a book, you are sitting down with it for a long period of time as a reader. You're spending a lot of time with that author, with their world, with the characters that they've made, and they are inviting you into it and you're going with them. I always think of they're taking you by the hand down the forest path, and you're saying, okay, lead me, where are we going? And you've got to go somewhere. If you don't, there's no move, if there's no change, if you don't have that feeling of life happening, you're going to stop reading. You're absolutely going to stop reading. So we can talk about this idea of change in the different genres. I actually think it all applies to all the things. If you're writing nonfiction, the person that's changing is the reader. They're the ones that are going through the arc of change. In fiction, it is the protagonist is going through some kind of change. And in memoir, it's you, the author, but you also are the protagonist of that story. You're the main character of that story, and we want to see you change. So change applies to all three genres. So we can start out, I would like to start out by talking to Savannah about, when you're working, particularly I'm thinking of sci-fi and fantasy, one of the thrills of reading that kind of book is to immerse yourself in these other worlds, these worlds that are not ours, these worlds that have different elements. Maybe there's magic, or maybe there's just a whole different structure of the way that world holds together. That's the appeal for a lot of the readers of that kind of work, but also the writers of that kind of work. Do you find that writers get stuck in that? Like, well, I just have this cool world and that's enough. Do you see that as a problem?
Yeah, so sometimes, and it's funny because I just worked with a writer recently who she had been working on this book for 8 years and she had never made it past act one. And she came to me and she's like, I just can't figure out the technology and the science and the blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, well, what if we just put in placeholders? Like instead of, because one of the things was like, I can't figure out what a cell phone will look like in 2052 or whatever her year was. And I'm like, what if you just call it a cell phone and figure it out later? You know, and just these little tweaks helped her get further along in her draft. And she actually just finished last week.
Oh, wow.
So if you're listening, you probably know who you are, and congratulations to you. But yeah, they get stuck in this, and it's, people always say things like, oh, well, in Harry Potter, I could just walk around this world and not have any change. And like, I'd be happy to visit Hogwarts. But, and yeah, we do. That's why we go to Universal Studios and stuff, right? But we do want to follow that character who changes, and we want to live vicariously through them. So it's not enough to just sit in the world and say, like, I'm going to drink some butterbeer or whatever. We want to experience the world and see that change that you've been talking about through someone's eyes. So, and like you said, that's what a novel offers us that a TV show or whatever doesn't.
So in the case of this writer who was stuck, because that's a very typical situation.
Yeah.
How did, besides the, okay, let's make a placeholder for the technology, how did you get her to focus back on the character and what that character was experiencing?
Yeah. So one of the things we did is we started talking, because she had a really strong world that she had designed already. She had all these notes and all the stuff. So we started saying, okay, let's look at the pieces of the world you have and see if there are any themes in there or any, you know, things, any change that you want to show or any messages that you want to show through your character. So we kind of backed into it that way. And then we said, okay, how do we create a character who's going to be challenged by this world and who's going to learn to, you know, grow and expand themselves in this world? So we started there. And then, of course, we went through the blueprint questions, which I know we're probably going to get to.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great process. And was she open to that process?
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because I think once you get writers talking, they kind of start to hear themselves saying stuff and you can reflect it back to them. And they're like, oh, I already know my theme. I had no idea. You know, so it's kind of fun.
Really fun.
Yeah.
So we're kind of talking about two different kinds of change here, right? We're talking about there needs to be change in terms of, what's happening. So something is going on at the beginning, the protagonist's wife and a group of her colleagues have been trapped in the top of a building by a bad guy. Hello, Die Hard. And by the end of the book, we expect that the protagonist's wife and her colleagues are not still trapped in the top of the building by the bad guy. So that's one kind. But we also expect that the protagonist has changed. And I actually love using Die Hard because that's when people are like, no, he doesn't change. That's not what we care about. But it actually is. Die Hard would not be the movie that it is, and it wouldn't be a Christmas movie if he didn't basically find the meaning of life while saving his wife and the group of colleagues from the bad guy who has them trapped at the top of the building.
It's very true. So you're talking about the external and the internal, which is obviously a thing we will talk about a lot in going forward. And it's the idea of change within the shape of your story. So, you know, Die Hard is a thriller, there's a bad guy. Or Savannah was talking about there's this world and these things have changed in this world. Like there's the container of the story. And then there's that. So it's change is also movement. I always struggle because the words that I use, if I am evaluating a finished manuscript and it's not working, the words that you use are often, you struggle to explain it because I used the word flat before. It often feels flat. It feels lifeless. Sometimes if I'm being really honest, I'll use the word bloodless. It feels bloodless. It's like, okay, this is great. Everything is here. The elements are all here, but it just doesn't move you. And the thing that moves you is this idea of change or movement, or what is that? What is that character or that person trying to, what are they struggling with? What are they going to know? What are they going to believe? Where are they going to arrive? Savannah, I'm sure you get this a lot as well in the work that you do. What do you say when something is not working?
Yeah. And so it's funny because I struggle with the words too, because it's kind of like, how do you explain flat to somebody? Or like, there's no oomph to it, right? But one of the things I ask in the nicest way possible is like, why should somebody care about this? So like, make me care, convince me that I need to care and that I need to read this book. And or if you could change the world in one way, how would you change it? And I kind of try to take their answers and help them get to this change they're trying to show. But really, it's that like, you can even ask yourself, why should someone care about this book? What's so important? What is so meaningful? And if you can't answer, then you're probably writing something that's flat or bloodless.
Yeah.
And we have like an instinct. This is what Lisa Krohn talks about in Story Genius too, right? Like we want, once you hook us into that person, we want to see how they're going to change. Even if it's the most, people worry that, you know, that their character's evolution is trite and it's something that's been done before, but it often is. I mean, it's like just was calling to our attention to Die Hard, and I said he learns the meaning of life. I mean, how many movies are that? It's a Wonderful Life and Die Hard are the same movie in weird and very...
The same point. They have the same point.
They do. And I once was stuck on a bus watching a movie that I I don't know what it was called, and I don't know who thought this was a good idea, but some very famous people were involved in the story of a dude who accidentally turns into a cat and has to convince his wife that he's a cat, but also he has to learn that his wife and son are the most important thing. Things to him, not his business, which is going to be taken over by other people because he's a cat and he's in a coma. And I mean, wow. A terrible movie, right? No one would voluntarily. It had Jennifer Garner in it, and I don't remember who the dude was, but he was famous too. And I was like, oh my God. Anyway, but something about that, like, I didn't even have the audio on, and I still kept looking because I really wanted, I just needed to see the dude convince them that he was the cat and then get to be himself again. Anyway, yeah. So change can hook you in no matter how. Even when it's not the greatest change. But let's don't do that. We're not advising that. Don't write movies about people that turn into cats. Or do. I mean, if that's your thing.
Yeah. And I think, too, one of the things that hooks us is, like, we want to believe that we have the potential to change, which is why we go to stories. So, you know, if you can't think of it in these terms that we're talking about, think about how you can inspire somebody or, like, prove that, you know, we all are capable of change. And here's what my flavor of change is going to look like in this story.
I love that. I love that you brought that up and that you said it that way. That was what I was trying to get at in the beginning. And you just said it way better in much fewer words. This idea of why do we even read? It's because we want to feel that potential that we have to change. That's exactly what it is. And I was thinking of nonfiction. I recently bought Brené Brown's new book, Atlas of the Heart. And I've heard her on 9 million podcasts talking about this book. And it was like, okay, I'm going to buy the book. And the premise is that we don't have a very specific language for emotion. And she did a study and she found that most people, if you ask them how they're feeling, they'll either say that they're happy, sad, or mad. That's like the range of emotional language that most of us have. And so this book is her effort to get us to expand our language of how we can express what we're feeling. And her point is that this richness of language is actually instrumental to our humanity. That part of what she's saying is that we're losing the ability to communicate how we're feeling. And when we reduce it down to these small things, we're kind of losing touch with each other. So she has a really big mission or point around this idea. But when I'm reading this book, Atlas of the Heart, the change that she's promising. So last time we talked about book jacket, what does she promise me? She promises me that I'm going to learn more words and a better understanding of my own experience of emotion. So that's the promise. And then the change that I'm going to have when I finish this book is I will have more confidence in using these words and in understanding these words and in being a person who uses this richer language. And it's true that she has changed me. I mean, that's what we're talking about, is I have become a person who will now say, I'm feeling a sense of despair, just as an example, right? Or I'm feeling very anxious, instead of just I'm freaking out or I'm mad at you, I might say something more specific now. And I find myself expanding my vocabulary around these things, but that's expanding my self-awareness. Like, it's a really big change that happens. And I even find myself at times realizing that I don't have the word. It's like I'm feeling a thing, and it is not despair, and it is not anxiety, and it is not this. It's something else, and I need to land on a word for that, or I need to go back to Brené's book and find a word for it. And that kind of, like, when you think about it, what an incredibly powerful thing that she's done. She's changed me. She's offered me a chance to be a different person in the world. That's really big.
I love that, you know, of all the possible examples for us to land on, I think coming into this episode, people were probably like, well, this is going to be really fiction focused. But of all the possible examples to land on, you went with that. And I've mentioned 4,000 weeks a couple times in other episodes, which is time management for mortals, Oliver Berkman's book. And a lot of people have grabbed that. And it's similar. You know, there's really very little memoir component to this, although it is the story of him. He does discuss his learning that basically you can't control time, and you only have so much of it, and no matter how hard you try, you will never get all the things done, so you'll be happier if you don't try. But yeah, his gift is to change the reader, I guess, to take the reader along with the change that he made, but to give the reader that change as well, that knowledge about themselves. So,
but KJ, what's interesting, and I want to ask you about this, is we're both friends with Laura Vanderkam, who also writes books about time. And she's mm-hmm. working on, I believe, her seventh book about time management.
Tranquility by Tuesday, right? Out this fall.
Right? And mm-hmm. and they're mm-hmm. all great, and she's great, and she has a huge following and all that. And we read all the books on time.
We do.
Right? Because yeah. we want to.
And Oliver Berkman, I believe, blurbed Laura's next book. So you might think to yourself, well, Laura's books, which tend to take you on a journey from I feel like I don't have any control over my time to I feel like I do have a control over my time, would be the complete opposite of Oliver Berkman's book, which is no one has any control over their time. But they're not, because they're both of these people are trying to free you from illusions about how the way that you spend your hours can change your
experience.
Your lived experience. So they're both on the same page, and yet. So they're different and the same.
Well, and that's what's cool about what you guys just said is you're reading all the books about how to manage time, and it's not like there's one that is the Bible, right? And that's the same with fiction, is we can have so many stories about love conquering all or good versus evil or whatever, and they're all just different. They're for a different reader's going to pick a different favorite out of all of those.
But that's why I this is one of my favorite conversations, because people tend to put different kinds of writing in silos. Like, oh, this is memoir, this is nonfiction, this is fiction. And what we're talking about right now is the change that I experience reading a time management book or a book about the language of emotion is exactly what I want to experience when I'm reading fiction. I want to see somebody else experience that change. I want to see them do a better job of self-awareness, or a better job of loving your neighbor as yourself, or a better job of like, loving is really a hard thing to do as a human. It's hard to love another human. And I want to see people get good at that. And I think I spoke about this before, but I did start reading a lot of Serena Bowen's fiction during the pandemic. And KJ, I think we've talked about her book, The Boyfriend, before. And, you know, this is just like a romance trope of a guy pretending to be a boyfriend. He's a stand-in boyfriend. And then the couple actually falls in love. And, like, you know exactly what's going to happen. So the change that is going to happen is these people are going to open themselves up to love, right? And you're just dying for it to happen. You're like, oh, no, don't miss the opportunity for this amazing change in your life, person. And, you know, you're rooting for them to open their eyes, to see that person in that light, to be that thing. And that's why we can read 9 million romance novels, because we want that experience of like, oh, no, it's not going to happen. And then, oh, look, it happened. Yay. You know, it's that we can't get enough of that.
And if you can't set that up properly, people aren't going to stick with you. Totally. So romance is a great example. People say, oh, romance is easy because you know what the ending is before you get in. No, romance is hard because you know what the ending is before you get in. So why would a reader go along with this journey? And the answer is because the change that these people have to go through to get to that happy ending needs to be real and enormous and engaging and feel like something that you yourself would struggle with if you were in their position.
It's so true. So Savannah, when you're working with a writer, what role does choices around the protagonist play? Like, who's the narrator of the story? Is the protagonist narrating their own story, or what is a POV? What role do those kinds of decisions play in this idea of change or transformation?
Yeah, so the first thing is picking a point of view character or knowing who's your narrator. That gives you a container, and it's not like you have all these outstanding choices you need to make, which I know is a big stressor for writers. But also, it's how you're going to view that arc of change. So is someone telling you about their own change? Is someone else telling you about their change? Is there an omniscient narrator talking about all different kinds of change? So it's really just the lens through which the reader is going to experience that change.
And do you find that people land on that pretty easily, or do they struggle around those decisions?
In my experience, I'd say most people know what they want to do. And then there's the handful that are just like, I want to do everything. I want to have omniscient. I want to have 10 other point of view characters. And, you know, I want to write some of my chapters through letters. And, you know, they just want to do all the things. But yeah, it's usually I find that people want to write the type of point of view that they read.
People want to write the point of view that they read. I think that's pretty true. Or if they read in multiple points, I mean, if you have multiple points of view, typically every one of those points of view needs to have some kind of change going on. And I think there's an exception to that. If you're Leanne Moriarty and you're starting out your book with the point of view of a waitress and they're only going to appear in one specific thing. So, you know, take a look at other books in your genre to realize what does and doesn't need an arc of change. But usually, secondary characters need some kind of change too, whether they're a point of view or not. Am I right?
Yeah, and something I found too, if a writer's struggling with that, it's almost like look at your protagonist and see how they're going to change, and then think about how you can echo that out or show the opposite mm-hmm. of that change. You know, so it's highlighting that same message just in all the different ways that you can think to explore it.
Well, and it also touches on an antagonist who often doesn't change. And that's often what's scary about them or evil about them, is that they are who they are and they live in the evil that they live in. And that when the protagonist comes up against that, you know, I mean, I'm thinking of Star Wars for some reason, you know, it's like the classic, like, you know, you come up against that unwavering force of darkness. Are you going to succumb to it, be tempted by it, or are you going to stand in your own integrity and, you know, be your own person and fight for good? But the bad guy or that antagonist often doesn't change. Although that being said, I often see writers be really helped by exercises for that antagonist, doing a story for them, or what's their, do they have an arc of change? Do they have some, how did they, you know, we love origin stories of bad guys. How did they become the bad guy? How did they get to where they are? Doing that kind of work helps you understand where they are in their arc of change, that maybe their arc of change is over and they just are who they are because of things that have happened to them. But sometimes understanding their humanity, even though they don't come across as being very having much humanity, but understanding that helps us understand them. And then that in turn helps us understand what that character is up against.
So we're dancing around this idea that the arc of change is often our point and kind of our theme.
Yeah, how we express it. And speaking of the antagonist, that's something I see that a lot of writers could spend more time on. And it's so funny when people do spend the time digging into like their antagonist worldview and what they want and why they want it. It's so much easier to write the protagonist's arc of change because you kind of know the opposite of that coin.
Yeah, you just used a word that I love, which was the expression of the point. The story is the expression of the point. And that we talked when we talked about the point. It's like a billboard. It's a bumper sticker. It's obvious. It's love conquers all. It's, you know, whatever, evil will always win out. You know, whatever your bumper sticker is, and the story is the expression of that. And when we get a story that is heavy-handed, or the writers trying to hammer their point home by telling us that, you know, we're getting into the big show don't tell thing. Like, let me tell you what my point is. Let me have my character tell you, like, it will come out of their mouth, blah, 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 you know, and which is that flatness that usually results in that flatness we're talking about. But the idea that the characters or the story is expressing the point is just a great phrasing of that, because it's, you're showing us, you're letting us experience it. We're being immersed in it, and we're getting to live it out our own selves in fiction. That's what we come for. And that same experience of going through that expression of the point is what good nonfiction does for us as well. It's actually exactly the same feeling. I recently read The Premonition by Michael Lewis. What an amazing book. Oh my goodness. Michael Lewis is the Moneyball guy, and The Premonition is about a group of scientists and public policy wonks who basically knew the pandemic was coming before the pandemic came, and they were desperately trying to protect the country and work with the CDC and the whole thing, and it didn't work. but it's just this incredible story of real life humans. So it's neither prescriptive nonfiction, nor is it memoir, nor is it fiction. It's narrative nonfiction, but you're immersed in this story, and the point, I mean, I guess if I had to say what the point is, it would be, we're all kind of screwed, y'all. I mean, it's kind of the point. It's like our public health system is not actually really designed to protect us from these threats, and these threats are increasingly going to happen. So it was kind of a big wake up call, right? Like, you got to wake up and see what is at stake here, and who to trust, and what the systems are, and that sort of thing. But so in terms of that, being immersed in that feeling as a reader, it was riveting, because it was like, oh no, what's going to happen here? So it was the plot unfolding, and that movement we were talking about of change happening in the plot. And there was a protagonist, it's a group of people, but there was one of them that was more prominent, the other, a woman. And you were just rooting so hard for her not to give up the game, not to just say, I throw up my hands, I am done here, I'm out. And she almost does. And then the very end of the book, it's actually quite fascinating what she could not do as a government employee. She starts a business and gets a massive amount of VC funding to do as a private citizen. Wow. And so she's kind of like the hero and the antagonist, if you will, is just a system that was not designed to do what it needs to do. And you're rooting for this person. And then the change that we're seeing is in that woman, that protagonist, that scientist, finding the resolve to keep doing this very hard work. We want her to find the resolve. And then that, you were talking about the mirroring, Savannah, and the reflection for the reader. It's like, would that I have the resolve to stand in my ground for whatever I believe in, or whatever I'm trying to do or accomplish. Like, let me have the tiniest fraction of resolve that she has. And so a book like that is all the pistons are firing, right? It's got all the things. It's got the point is really clear. The stakes are really high. The antagonist, even though it's a fuzzy amorphous government thing, is clear. The protagonist, their arc of change is clear. What's in it for the reader, like you were saying, why do I care? Why do I come to this? It's all just working, and the experience of being immersed in a book like that, I probably have told, well, now that I'm on the hashtag I'm writing podcast, I can multiply that number by a lot. Told a lot of people about this book. And And I'm using it as an example in my teaching all the time because it's so effective and it's so good. And that's how books are sold, is when we have that experience. It's like, I'm not saying, oh, KJ and Savannah, you got to read this book because we all need to know about this public policy. I'm saying you got to read this book because you're going to, it's like a ride and you're going to enjoy that ride. That's what I'm pressing the book into people's hands for. So, I don't know why I started talking about The Premonition, but
back to writers too. It's like, just based on, imagine if you were a writer and you heard someone like you talking about their book, and it's like, that's your prescription for the world. So how do you want the world to feel? And like, that writer probably had some version of what you just said of like, we can all be capable, we can all have resolve, you know, that was probably some version of their original point.
Right? Like, individuals can save the world. Like, we're in it. Things are going downhill fast, but individuals with good intentions can save the world. That's probably the point, right?
Yeah.
And again, that's the bumper sticker point. And it's a point we could find you fiction that's on that point. We can find you nonfiction that's on that point. We can find you how to books that are on that point. It's there aren't that, I mean, there are way more than 7 points, but, you know, there aren't, because there are only 7 stories, isn't that?
I mean, I don't know. I did a workshop with Lisa Cron once on Wired for Story, and we were doing the lessons on the point. I think we had something like 60 people in this class, and she and I were just, we were just marveling at how I think 85% of the points were about loving and being loved and finding your way to love, some version of that, some version of love. You have to open yourself up to love, some version of that. And it was just like, wow, all the books are about that. And they were, to your point, it was all fiction, but it was sci-fi, fantasy, romance, literary, middle grade, cozy mystery, you know, all of them. It was like, you could take all the specifics out and the bumper stickers were all the same. It was crazy.
Well, and if you flip that, the cautionary side is probably fear. So it's either like you're operating towards love or you're operating towards fear in most fiction or nonfiction, whatever.
So where in the process, Savannah, do you find, so we're talking here about the beginning of the process where people have found their why, they found their point, they thought about the market, they've maybe written their book jacket copy to kind of get their hands around it. Now they're really digging into, okay, what is the protagonist and what is the point of change? At what point does it begin to get specific to their characters and their situation and their voice and their story? You know, when does that come into it in your experience?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's now, because like you said, you're already narrowing the field, you know, you've picked your genre, you've kind of honed in on your point, and now you're just getting more specific of, okay, this message is going to show up in this flavor of genre, and now my character is going to express it in this way. So I don't know if you want to go through the questions of the blueprint now to show how we can get specific, or if you want to save that.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. So I'll just summarize them and feel free to stop me if you want. But the very first thing I have writers do is like, we pick whose story is this? So who is your protagonist? And, you know, this is the person who has the most at stake. They're going to be the one that's facing down that force of opposition and the one that readers are going to connect to. So it's going to be their avatar for experiencing the story. The second question is like, what do they want? And or what do they think is going to make them happy, make them feel fulfilled? What do they think's missing? And how are they going to plug in that hole? And it should be something specific, because something like, I want happiness, well, that could mean 25 billion things to different people. And when they have a goal to follow, this is what gives them agency. So it's not like your character is just kind of sitting on the couch going, gosh, I wish I was happy tomorrow. It's like, okay, well, how do you see happiness and what are you going to do to achieve it? The third thing I would normally ask is, what do they need? So if they do or don't get that thing they want, what is that thing underneath it that they're searching for? So it could be like a sense of completeness. It could be confidence. It could be, you know, basically what really will fill that hole of the thing they're lacking. And then this also helps relate to stakes. So like, if they don't get that thing they want, what kind of lack are they going to feel, or how are they going to feel incomplete? So then after that, I would think about what is standing in their way. So inside and outside. So outside, if we think about something like Harry Potter, it's, you know, Snape, it's Draco, it's Voldemort. It's those external forces of opposition. And it's also the fact that he doesn't really know what he's doing as a new wizard. Internally, what's standing in their way? So what is that misbelief or that outdated worldview? And for Harry Potter, because it's one of my favorite stories, we can just imagine that it's the fact that he doesn't really buy into this, like, I'm the boy who lived and I'm going to be the one to defeat Voldemort. He has a lack of self-confidence because he was raised with muggles who treat him terribly. So that's his internal opposition he needs to get over. So that's where I start. And then we kind of dig into those in layers. So like, if someone wants to be happy, why do they want to be happy? And then we keep asking why until we get to the root of what's going on.
And those external goals can change as the book goes on, either in fiction or in memoir or in the narrative nonfiction. You know, I'm thinking about it as you're rooting for the people in The Premonition. You know, there's a moment when you're rooting for them. I haven't read it, but I'm just making a historical guess. There's just, you know, you may root for them to actually prevent this thing. And then you root for them to change the mind of the people around them. And then you start rooting for them to find some other way. So the thing that you want and the thing that your protagonist want can evolve. Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's fun because if you're, depending on the point of view you choose, the reader might know more than the protagonist. So it's almost like the protagonist might want something and you're like, no, please don't do that because you don't know what's around the corner. So it's a fun way to play with readers' experience too.
That was a great rundown. Thank you.
It was quick. Thank you.
No, I mean, it's good. There's so much work to do around this simple idea of what is the arc of change, what is the transformation. Everything about the book can be answered through this lens, really. And now is the time in the process to do it. Or if you are working on revision, now is the time to think, do I have that? Where do I have that? Do I need to show that more? Do I need to express that more? Does that need to come out more?
And that's what will help you create the structure, which I know you're probably going to go to next, because when your character wants something and they have agency, the structure and the plot is how they're going to go find it or get it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So that feels like a good place to end, since we're going to go to plot and structure next.
But what should people who want to get this clinched down or who are playing along with the Blueprint Challenge, what do listeners do to get their hands around this one?
So the assignment this week is to define the arc of change of your protagonist. So that means you need to know who your protagonist is. And you need to know where they're coming into the story. And I don't mean what's happening. I mean, what do they believe or know or think about the world that they're coming into and themselves in that world? And then where are they going to end up? So what is that transformation we're going to see happen? What are they going to come to know or believe about themselves or the world? So knowing where they start and knowing where they end. And we just want to make sure that you can define that arc of change. And it can literally just be two bullet points. It could be, here's where they are at the beginning, here's where they are at the end. This is the change that they experience. And if you're writing memoir, that's going to be you. What did I know at the start? What did I know at the end? How did I change over that experience? And if you're writing nonfiction, it's going to be, what is the change you want your reader to experience? What do you want them to feel and to know and believe at the end that they didn't know at the beginning? So it's a simple assignment, but it's a hard one.
And do they get bonus points if it relates back to their point?
Oh, it must relate back to the point. Total bonus points. Yes, absolutely. If it doesn't, you either got to change your point or you got to change your protagonist. Yeah, it's that's why we build it that way. And that's a very good reminder, Savannah, about the blueprint, that it is iterative. And we will say that over and over and over. You're constantly going to be going back and refining and defining and understanding. And that process never ends. It KJ knows because she's in it right now.
I'm always
at a certain point, you're doing that with a whole book manuscript as well, and deepening your understanding of these things. So the process that we're going through with the blueprint is the same. So if your protagonist is not expressing your point, or the reason why you've come to this book as a writer, your own self, you've got to go back and lock those things in. So absolutely bonus points.
Savannah, thank you so much for coming and joining us and helping us stay on point. I love the bringing it back to how to find this change that you did here at the end of the episode. That was perfection, and I'm grateful. We are both grateful. So tell listeners where they can best find you.
Sure. And first of all, thank you so much for having me. This was super fun. If you want to get in touch with me, just go to my website, savannahgilbo.com, and you can find me there.
Sounds good. If you want to get in touch with us, you can email us amwritingpodcast@substack. I will get this. I think it's actually just amwriting@substack.com. Well, I'll put it in the show notes. Yes, it is. It's amwriting@substack.com. You can always find us on Facebook. That one's the Am Writing Podcast Facebook group. You can sign up to get all the emails and everything that you need to know about the Blueprint for a Book series by going to authoraccelerator.com/AmWritingBlueprintChallenge. And yeah, those are the things that you can do. Thanks so much for listening. We enjoyed this episode as we always do. And I'm going to say it again this time. Until next week, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game.
The hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
Listeners, have you been meaning to check out what Serena does when she's not giving you publishing advice and all the scoop on the latest bullet journals? Head to serenabowen.com, that's S-A-R-I-N-A, for a free short story, or to get an idea of what's going on in the Serena universe, to sign up for her always genius book emails, and just maybe pre-order her upcoming release, Love Lessons. And if you're wondering where in Serena world you should start, I always recommend Brooklyn Air, an uber-smart, gloriously entertaining romp through a world of Silicon Valley success and romantic disaster, plus private jets and palindromes. I adore it, and I bet you will too.